Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Dan Foster of National Review Online, filling in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Dan, yesterday, Jim and I got exactly what we expected in the Obama budget. I think most conservatives did. It was more of the same. Huge spending, no real cuts anywhere with the exception of the defense budget. He wants huge tax cuts on the wealthy. And obviously, we're hoping for Republicans to point out these very important facts about the budget. And the good news is a lot of them did, including Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell.
Today, President Obama released a budget that isn't really a budget at all. It's a campaign document. The president's goal isn't to solve our problems, but to ignore them for another year, which will only ensure that they get even worse. Once again, the president is shirking his responsibility to lead by using this budget to divide us.
Now, of course, every liberal commentator in response to that will point out that Mitch McConnell once said that his number one goal is to defeat the president. So therefore, that rubs out any merits whatsoever to anything he will ever say again on the Senate floor or anywhere else. But Dan, between him and Marco Rubio and a lot of the House Republicans, Speaker Boehner and others, they got this right. The question is whether Americans understand that this president who talks about fiscal responsibility exercises none of it and is really only interested in his own job.
Yeah, I mean, you're right that the Republicans were all over this. I mean, it was a full court press from both Senator Sessions and the Senate Budget Committee's staff and from Congressman Ryan and his staff yesterday. I think the email started going into my spam folder automatically because there were so many of them. But, you know, it's important. And I think the reason why everyone was so well prepared for this is because this is the fourth budget in a row we've seen from this president that doesn't make any tough decisions, that just is a grab bag of goodies for his favorite programs. I mean, it does things like increase the subsidy for the Chevy Volt, every single one of which has been recalled. There isn't a drivable Chevy Volt in the country right now, and this president decided that the thing to do in a time of a predictable impending debt crisis is to increase the subsidy for that car. So yeah, it's a mess of a budget. It relies on the same gimmicks he's relied on for years. It has the same poor economic assumptions that he's relied on for years, and it delays the tough choices that he promised in 2009 he'd make. And I hope that whoever the Republican nominee is, that we see that quote from February 2009 where he says that he's going to cut the deficit in half by the end of his first term. I hope we see that 20 times a day and, you know, 18 of those in prime time, because it's not just that this budget fails to live up, as we say in our editorial today, it's not just that this budget fails to live up to the standards of fiscal rectitude or responsibility, fails to live up to his own standards, the standards that he set for himself. And hopefully, and I believe that will be even more damning to the president and the election to come.
McConnell did another good job in that same message on the Senate floor about pointing out basically the lies that the administration's been perpetrating on why the Senate hasn't passed a budget in over 1,000 days. You had the new chief of staff, Jack Lew, who's a former budget director, claiming that you need a supermajority to pass a budget in the Senate, which is not true, which means that a simple majority of Democrats could have passed it long ago. But as we saw last year with a 97-0 vote, the Democrats don't want to touch this. And this budget will be especially toxic in an election year for the many of them that are on the ballot this year. And so you can pretty much assume that they're not going anywhere near it.
Yeah, I joked yesterday on Twitter that all the Democratic hacks that I follow must absolutely love the budget because they're all tweeting about contraception. Not one of them would mention this thing.
The Republicans did a good job of speaking about fiscal responsibility on Monday. Today is a slightly different story, however, as we transition to martini number two. And as Dan well knows, and I well know, and our listeners I'm sure well know, the Democrats insisted for some strange reason on a two-month extension rather than a year-long extension of the payroll tax cut, mainly because they could use it as a political weapon, right about now. The Republicans are in favor of extending it for the rest of the year, but they wanted spending offsets, in other words, to make this not add to the deficit. Well, all of a sudden now that's not so important. Now they're going to focus on possibly changing the way unemployment benefits are done. And, of course, the administration's not budging on that. Here is Greg Jarrett of Fox News talking with it just earlier this morning with the number two Republican on the House Budget Committee, Scott Garrett of New Jersey.
because you were so adamant that without an offset you were going to allow this to expire. Haven't you now removed that political football, very damaging to the GOP, by relenting?
Yeah, I think it may hurt the GOP with some sort of arguments going forward of saying how much should we add to the debt. This will add about $100 billion to the debt. But we've certainly come out in a stronger position on the political ground, saying that we're willing to compromise, willing to work with the administration when they are not.
Well, they're willing to work and play well with others, never mind the $100 billion they're adding to the debt and the promise that they had all along in this debate. Dan, this is not going to bode well for people who aren't sure if this Republican leadership is up to the job, because this is folding 2 weeks ahead of the deadline.
Look, this is no question the bad martini, but I don't see any good way out of it. The fact of the matter is they did get hammered on this. It's a political battle that they lost for a lot of reasons, for both substantive and, I think, cosmetic reasons. They lost the battle. Here's the problem, though. It's what Congressman Garrett said is right. And by the way, shout out. He's my congressman, the most conservative member of the House north of the Mason-Dixon line, in New Jersey's own Fifth District. Anyway, he's absolutely right, but it's also the fact that when you capitulate on something like this, the Democrats move the goalpost, and who can blame them? They got killed by the Republicans for almost two straight years, certainly all of 2011, and right up there until December. So now they've got this winning issue, and they intend to turn the screws. So the House Republican leadership is saying, okay, we'll pass this year-long extension without any offsets, but we're just going to do it for the payroll tax cut. It's already a loss for them, and the Democrats turn around and say, okay, but that's nice. What about unemployment benefits and the doc fix? We're going to make you do that now. So they're still looking for a way that they can extract maximum capitulation from the Republicans and also keep moving the goalposts so that it's still a political loser for them, whether they end up voting for the payroll tax cut extension or not.
On to martini number three now, and this is in its most basic form, Dan, not a funny story, but the fact that everybody's okay and the bizarre nature of this does add a little bit of humor to this. Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer was robbed last week. That's not funny. But he was on a Caribbean island, the island of Nevis, I think is how you say it, robbed at machete point. Are we going back how many centuries here to pull off this type of crime? I don't know if there's going to be a machete control case coming before the court soon, but he might have to recuse himself if there is.
Yeah, I mean, the joke, as you said, it's great that everyone's all right, and this is obviously a very serious thing. But the joke we made around here was, we wonder if the West Indies have a Second Amendment, and maybe if he could have had some self-defense in his home, and we wonder how the justice would feel about that. It's interesting to note, a little bit of trivia, that this is not the first Supreme Court justice to have been mugged. Actually, Ruth Bader Ginsburg had her purse snatched, and former Justice Souter was mugged while jogging sometime in the 90s. So it's a little bit more common than you think. Incidentally, the last Supreme Court justice to be mugged by reality was Byron White, who was appointed by the Democrat John F. Kennedy, but became a conservative stalwart during his tenure on the court.
That's an excellent point. In fact, he and Bill Rehnquist were the only ones to vote against Roe v. Wade. So
that's right.
So that's a very good point. Mugged by reality. I like that one a lot. Dan, as always, a great pleasure to have you filling in for Jim. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
Dan Foster of National Review Online, and for Jim Garrity today, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us. Please join us again on Wednesday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.